Lead Long and Prosper, your spellcast for joy in leadership. Experiences, tips, and valuable hacks for all those who want to lead with joy.
Hello, everyone, to our new episode of the Spellcast. Today in English, and we are very happy because we have a very, very special guest. But before I come to our guest, let me first introduce my co-interviewer, which is Sabine.
Hello, everyone.
And our spellcaster today is Hans Joachim.
Welcome to you.
Today, we are honored to welcome an exceptional guest to Spellcast, Professor Dr. Daniela Schwarzer. Hello, first of all, Daniela.
Hello, I'm very pleased to be with you today.
Daniela is a leading expert in European and international politics, economic policy, and transformational leadership. Throughout her career, she has operated at the highest level of media, think tanks, policy advisory, and executive leadership, not just analyzing change, but actively shaping it. Since May 2023, Daniela has been a member of the executive board at the Bertelsmann Stiftung, one of Germany's most influential foundations. In this role, she leads initiatives focused on Europe's future, democracy, and social cohesion, tackling some of the most pressing geopolitical and economic challenges of our time. Her ability to navigate complex policy landscapes has made her a key voice in shaping Europe's strategic direction. Her career has always been defined by an international perspective. Having lived and worked in Germany, France, and the UK, she moves seamlessly between languages and cultures. She began her professional journey in Paris at a pivotal moment, the introduction of the euro, analyzing its political implications and how the corporate sector could manage the current changeover. This early experience gave her a deep understanding of how policy and economic interact and how strategic decisions at the highest levels impact businesses and societies. She first made a name of herself in journalism, building and leading the commentary team at Financial Times Deutschland. But instead of staying in the role of observer and commentator, she made the decision to step into the arena, moving to the other side to actively shape policy and strategy. She has since held major leadership roles in some of the most respected policy institutions, including the German Marshall Fund of the United States, where she directed European programs, and the German Council on Foreign Relations, DGAP, where she served as director and CEO. Later, she took on a leadership position at the Open Society Foundations in Europe and in Central Asia, focusing on strengthening democracy, the rule of law, and open societies. Beyond her policy and strategic work, Daniela has also been deeply engaged in leadership development and teaching. She has served as an honorary professor of political science at Freie Universität Berlin since 2021 and was a visiting professor at Harvard University, where she remains affiliated as a senior fellow. Her work focuses on transformational leadership, taking a systemic view on change, and examining the role of individuals in shaping the future. Influenced by her professor colleagues there, she has often asked herself the thought-provoking question, whose water are you carrying? Challenging leaders to reflect on their place in broader power structures. Her governance expertise extends beyond the public sector. She sits on the board of BNP Paribas and Covivio, bringing her economic and strategic insights to some of Europe's largest financial and real estate institutions. She's also an honorary board member of the DGAP and a member of the advisory board of the Jacques Delors Institute in Paris. An accomplished author, her recent books, Krisenzeit and Final Call, explore Europe's position in an increasingly fragmented global landscape and the critical decisions ahead for Germany and the EU. And beyond all of this, she is also a mother of three, bringing not just high-level strategic thinking, but also real-world pragmatism, balancing professional leadership with personal responsibility. Daniela, we are thrilled to have you with us today. Welcome to the Spellcast. And I have to say, I had to write this down because it is such a wonderful but also enriched career that I wanted to make sure I give you full justice of your life accomplishments. So first of all, congratulations and thank you for being with us today.
Achim, thank you so much. Thank you for this wonderful welcome. And I have to say, the moment where I started smiling is when you mentioned my kids. So that was very nice as an ending.
At the end is always about the next generation. And that's actually why we are here also at the Spellcast, because we want to enable the next generation maybe to be inspired by your journey. Tell us a little bit and let's start there. What is your current role and how did you get there?
So my current role is on the executive team of the Bertelsmann Foundation, which is Germany's largest private foundation, and it's an operational foundation. So we are not a grant-making institution, but we are a do-tank and a think tank. So we implement our own projects, we do this with partners, and luckily we have an endowment so we can support organizations, but we actually define and implement our own working agenda. Well, and how did I get there? I was working with the Open Society Foundations, which is a grant-making organization, which has a global outlook. And I, at some point, got convinced that I need to be more in operational work than just a grant-maker, although that's a big job as well. And I also wanted to have a focus on Germany in its European context, because I do think that my home country and the European continent, on the one hand, has a huge potential, but on the other hand, has a huge workload as well. And I wanted to make a contribution really in a focused way so I could see the impact more clearly.
How much of your work today, and I know it's a rhetorical question, but I'd be curious about your answer, involves leadership?
It's a lot. And it's not only the fact that I'm on the executive team and with two colleagues share responsibility for the organization, but it's also because so much of my work is about public leadership. I mean, speaking up, setting themes, defining questions where we need to go as a society, as a country, as a European Union with 27 members, and then also in a wider sense, where do democracies need to go? So I think this idea of thought leadership, in particular in times where we see tectonic shifts in our political, geopolitical, geoeconomic and security environment, is extremely important. And that is nothing just for policymakers, so elected politicians or others. It's really something for each and every one of us, because we see how discourse is shifting, how suddenly things can be said that were completely unacceptable even a year ago or 6 months ago or a month ago. So we really see fundamental shifts happening. And there are some things which, in my view, need to be contradicted and need to be corrected. And also we need a positive vision where to go as a society. So I think more or less most of my work is in some way or another related to leadership.
Daniela, I'm interested in knowing what motivated you the most in your life, because you had so many steps in your business life. So what was the strongest motivator for you?
One of my motivations for my career was really to explore how I can work as a European. As a child, I spent part of my childhood in London, in the UK. And so I experienced how it is to be like a fish in the water in a different context, in a different country, in a different culture, in a different language setting, and I just really enjoyed that so much. And I also learned that it is possible to understand each other and to do things together and to integrate. And then I was, as a young person, very conscious of our historical legacy as a German, and also as someone who spoke a lot with her parents and grandparents about the Second World War, about the Nazis, about Europe growing together. And I studied political science and really wanted to work on European integration. And so I had this personal motivation to speak languages, to travel, to live abroad. And then I had this understanding I want to contribute to a fantastic project which our continent has been able to build. And I think that together was a big motivation. And then there's a third thing, which is much more related to transformation and leadership. And I only discovered that much later. I started out as a journalist and then I worked as an expert. And I thought we could make a difference in the field I worked in as a think tanker, to contribute smart ideas to policy discussions, to find practical solutions for problems. But in fact, knowing a solution doesn't bring change. So I started to wonder, what is it that, from that perspective, as a think tanker, we can bring so it is actually possible to enable change, not only by providing an intellectual piece of work, but by actually working with people to enter into dialogue, to start forging compromise, to foster mutual understanding, and to move ahead. And then at some point I realized that even that is not enough, But it is really, when I think about transformation, it's really about understanding the pain points, understanding the obstacles, understanding what holds organizations back. And that can be an organization like an NGO or a think tank, a company, but it can also be a society. So by now, I have earned a very deep understanding of what it takes to enable transformation. And sometimes it makes me breathless because it is so complex and because it requires so many skills and deep understanding. But it really motivates me to keep thinking about the question, how can we bring people together with very different skills and very different understandings to bring change to the complex systems we all live in? And also to do this under enormous pressure, because our times are of enormous pressure for the global system, for Europe, for countries, but also for each individual. And to be able to change, you need a vision, you need a certain trust that it's possible, trust into where you want to go, but also that you can manage that yourself. And so by now, you know, that piece also keeps me very motivated to foster more of that deep understanding and to be, you know, a humble agent of change in whichever way is possible.
But probably it's also very difficult what you do. And I want to ask you about the impact, because thought leadership, as you called it a few minutes ago, is not something where you know exactly how and where it goes. So it's always a very indirect impact. How do you measure your own impact? How do you know that your thoughts are actually arriving where they should be?
So from the policy world, I'd like to quote an example, which was, it's years ago, and I wrote a paper, and suddenly I found paragraphs of that paper in a speech held by a politician, obviously without a source, and so no quote. And that is success, because you see someone who is in political responsibility takes an idea, embraces it, and then takes it forward and makes it their own. I think that's the real point. And then there are other cases, of course, where I would say something is successful if you publish something and then someone comes and says, can we talk more about it? I really want to understand this. And you get into this conversation where you also learn so much, because of course you can never provide a complete solution, but you then engage and you understand, okay, here's something, we need to take this forward. And suddenly you have a partner who is as interested as you are in a solution. Then you know, okay, this person is now taking responsibility for something you had wished them to do, and maybe the solution in the end is a slightly different one, which is totally fine, because as an expert you cannot provide solutions that work for all stakeholders. So every decision-making process, every change process needs to respect all stakeholders. And when you introduced me, you spoke about this idea, whose water are you carrying? I think this is a fascinating reflection we all need to have, because when you think about a problem, and again, it can be a transformation in an organization which you want to lead, or it can be a big political problem, you have many stakeholders, and some will lose and some will win, and you need to compromise. And they will surface their positions, but that's only part of the story. I would say that's maybe the tip of the iceberg for each stakeholder group, because behind them, they have much more. They have their historical legacy. They have other interest groups who may stand behind them. They may have family. They may have obligations they feel. And that also needs to be, as much as you can, surfaced so you really know with whom you are working. Because if you don't, then you find some kind of solution. You think you have implemented something that will change an organization or will lead to something new, and then you realize it doesn't happen. So I learned through various experiences how much it takes to actually bring change about, and just deciding something doesn't mean anything changes. I've seen big decisions not being implemented, and I've seen decisions that were formally implemented not leading to change. So there's this saying, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I would also say culture eats change ambition for breakfast. If you don't work with what you have and if you don't work on actually change of identities in a transformation process.
What do you think? What kind of leadership style could strengthen our democracy?
For me, leadership in a democracy at this moment in particular has a lot to do with honesty and with vision. And I often hear people who say, oh, vision is not, you know, that's too far away, we don't need that, and who are very negative about this word, which may be flurry, but I actually think both have to come together. Honesty, because we are really facing challenges, and leaders in democracies cannot pretend there's not a deep challenge. Those are security challenges, those are challenges to our socioeconomic model, to our own thinking about our lifestyle. We really need a very encompassing change for the sake of sustainability of our systems in a very broad sense. And so this we need to face. And secondly, the vision needs to be there because it can be overwhelming to just face the challenges without having an idea where to go. I'll give you one example. Right now, we are looking at changes happening in the United States. And one of the big things is that we see how technology and political leadership have moved very closely together, with the US president very openly teaming up with big tech leaders who control digital infrastructure to a very, very strong degree. So we as Europeans can sit down and watch this and can analyze and have to analyze to what extent this can be dangerous for our own sovereignty and autonomy, and to what extent this can also be dangerous to our democracy, because we have a very different understanding of what kind of regulation, what kind of privacy, what kind of data protection you want in Europe and in the US. There are big differences. And now we need to do big things. We need to catch up with digital and technological developments. We need to rethink our regulatory approach, and we need to rethink what potential do we have in the digital sphere for our societies. What is the good that comes with AI? How can we use it? But how can we also control it? And these changes from a societal perspective will be fundamental. Work, life changes, the way we think about care, the way we think about education, job losses that we will see, but also a huge potential where systems can get much better and more efficient. But we won't be able to provide people with the self-confidence and the agency to contribute and to live in that new world unless we have a vision. What is the European way to think about society going forward under totally new conditions? So this is why I'm saying honesty about challenges and the courage to have a vision are necessary to lead politically, and that was your question, democratic leadership, to lead through times where things have to change and where citizens have to be taken along.
You gave the rather negative example now of the US, where policy decision-making and technical decision-making is misused. Now, if we turn it positively, what would be the way? How do we bring policy leadership and business leadership together to make and come to that vision that you're talking about? Or in other words, what is the business leader's responsibility in this process?
I think business leaders have a huge responsibility, and they can live it in different ways. One is the public way. We have seen business leaders speak up clearly before the European elections and before the German elections about the risk of a non-democratic vote, what it would mean for their company, but also from a normative moral perspective. They spoke about the danger of dividing or polarizing within our societies. And so there is a public leadership role which concerns democracy and which concerns cohesion. And this is not anything that is in contradiction to their corporate self-interest. And that was so interesting to see how business leaders developed that narrative, because they really, some of them really started with their own example, saying, imagine we would not have colleagues with an immigrant background. Imagine they would all leave, or imagine they wouldn't come and we need more. So they actually took their own example and made it clear what they need in an open society which is diverse and which has to live this reality in a positive and productive way. Then there's another area, and that is about economic performance, because Germany's economy is not doing well. We have had now 2 years of recession, risking a third one. And I have heard top CEOs or chairmen of big companies say, maybe we didn't do enough over the past years in voicing our concern. Maybe we didn't engage enough when we saw that we were losing track. We were not catching up with the developments of others. And maybe we are really also responsible for the fact that this lasted so long until things are turned around now. And I find that a very interesting and self-critical understanding, which I just heard yesterday, really, from a very important business leader in Germany who was self-critical and said, I thought about it a lot, but I never really spoke up. So this public conversation of where we are going as a country, as an economy, as a society, how we think about our role in Europe, we can't just leave this to the chancellor, right? This is a collective thing. And then there's also this internal leadership role. Within a company, as a CEO, you have a role to play in the way you talk to your employees, how you engage, what kind of culture you foster, where people dare to speak up, where people feel that criticism can be a positive contribution, where you engage on issues that are of collective interest, for instance, on diversity issues. You bring in those who have an interest within the company. And then obviously the mechanisms of co-determination in Germany, which are very developed, where employers have their representation through work councils and all of this. And this is not only a formality. I think it's a question of how you show people you respect their opinions, but also how you enable them to see the bigger picture. In particular, when it's a tough situation economically and you have to convey negative news and you have to make sure people understand that some things change, which they may not like, I think your only chance really is to explain and to take everyone along by making it clear that the goal is shared by everyone in the company. So I think there's, you know, so much a good CEO within a company can do to give employees the feeling of being part of something bigger and being part of something where they are respected and acknowledged.
So maybe a closing question then before Hans-Joachim comes in. You know, this Spellcast is also about bringing joy in leadership and encouraging the younger generation to step in. Now, obviously, this is about taking responsibility. This is what leadership is. What would you say is the joy in leadership in times like this, and how to encourage younger generations to step in and take over responsibility?
So my joy in leadership is really when I get this feeling of, wow, we're really getting something going. I have a team, I have colleagues, I have a group, and sometimes this is not even within my own organization, but in a broader context, where you suddenly get this feeling there is a common goal and there's a lot of energy which can be mobilized. And when there's a specific problem to solve or thing to move, and you don't even have the solution, and that this is totally okay, but you know there needs to be transformation and you collectively work out where you go. So while I said for leadership there needs to be a vision, I'm totally convinced, because otherwise you have no broad direction where you're going and you can't build the sense of moving somewhere together. But what the real joy in leadership is for me is when I see that a team together develops the solution, how to actually figure it out. And that's, I think, the best thing. When you watch this happening and then you say to yourself, wow, I'm not needed at the moment. Something is happening here and something new emerges, some new idea, some new understanding, and you just feel part of a process. And then I get the feeling, wow, this is a real joy.
First of all, thank you, Daniela. You certainly convinced us. Now, dear Hans-Joachim, I've noticed you have been listening very attentively and taking probably lots of notes. What stood out for you? And let's hear your thoughts.
Thank you very much for the honesty and the vision you've given us. I think it's a lot of learning for our listeners and myself. I had a high resonance with that, what you talked. And I will give some small things which come to my mind. One thing which nobody knows, but I loved the FTD in Germany. I loved it. I had a really bad moment when it was closed and Andrew Gower went and things like that. But if you see the Handelsblatt today, there is a lot of FTD in it. And thank you very much. But this as well shows that you seed something and you will not see the germination, but it's still there. And maybe germinate the year, the next year. And that means don't wait for the sudden success. Some things need time. And as Sloterdijk, a philosopher in Germany, said, you know, maybe we live too short for the season we are in, because we need solutions which are longer than our lifetime. I have listened to a person who thinks highly dialectic. One could say the Frankfurter Schule, where dialectic der Aufklärung is coming back, and on the other hand, systemic. And the combination of both, I think it's very helpful. If I melt it down, you are the queen of the word und, end, and not but, aber, because you look for the possibilities to communicate between the things which are in the first sight not fitting to each other. Whose water are you carrying? I came to Kung Fu, who said, be water. So be water in any conflict to find the way in between. I had the notion that doing this without a very, very deep idea about why I am in the world. Because if you say, grown up in London, and then the Brexit to accept. Okay, how do you re-energize yourself? So go along with the flow, but don't forget your roots. Deeply grounded, but flexible on the ground. One Dutch leader one time said, be seagrass. So deeply rooted in the soil, but very flexible in that what you want to achieve. You said in an earlier talk with us that you wanted to stop asking questions as a journalist, but coming to the side of creating answers. And I think this dialectic dance, let's say, is something which is your contribution in this talk, to let the younger people know it's not to run straight away, but find the bridges which you have been crossed before you reached that goal. You had a long, long way, and there were so many small bridges you have crossed. And maybe one of the bridges has been the question to your grandfather and father, so what is the responsibility now for the future? Thank you very much for the talk.
The last word, Daniela, always belongs to our guest. So what's your final thought or key insight on leadership and impact that you would like to leave our listeners with?
One thing is that leadership roles and having impact can really make people very happy, you know, because you ask for the motivation for young people. Sometimes it's a burden, because in a leadership position, you are also at the service of those whom you lead. You're responsible that they can work and perform. And there's a huge part which is really service to the organization and service to your teams. But I would say this collective energy and joy, if it works, and of course it doesn't work every day, it doesn't work everywhere, but there are these moments where you get into a moment where you can move things, where you can transform, where you can find out something new, and never alone, but collectively. I think this is something that I would like to leave you with, in particular as the complexity in these times is such that no one can pretend to have a solution. But I'm pretty confident that collectively we can find solutions, and I can't even tell you which, because it is a process. And this openness is really what gets me going, and where I sometimes have to remind myself, because it's so easy to stay in the process and in that what you know, but to ask yourself, am I actually asking the right question? and listen to those who get on your nerves because they tell you you don't. I think that's the moment where something new can emerge.
This was your Spellcast, Lead Long and Prosper, with Sabine Schmitzroth, Achim Plückebaum, and Hans-Joachim Spreng. Thank you for being with us, and see you next time.